Welcome to Making Sense of MarTech, in a regular set of conversations with some of the most interesting people in marketing, technology, and advertising. I'm Juan Mendoza. I write the MarTech Weekly. It's a weekly newsletter that covers most important shifts in the industry. People who work in some of the world's largest tech, media, and marketing companies read it. You can read, listen, and subscribe at themartechweekly.com. Now, today I am joined by Brian Williams. Brian is the founder of a newly formed firm, Hockey Stick Advisory. Now, Brian is an experienced operator in the platform ecosystems and partnership space. He played a key role in global accounting firm Xero's partnership and application strategy as the former director of ecosystem and apps. Hockey Stick Advisory helps companies set up and deploy successful ecosystem strategies. And Brian also serves as a mentor and advisor for several VC funds, such as Blackbird Ventures and Startup Vic. In this episode, we talk about the growing role of platform ecosystems in the technology and marketing landscape, how companies are building new channels of growth, customer engagement, and partnerships. We touch on the incentives of ecosystems and their role in the broader marketing and technology industry, how ecosystems form within companies, identifying how other companies serve your customer, and different types and shapes and sizes of partnership and ecosystems within the market. So, without further ado, I bring you Brian Williams. How you doing, Brian?
Good, thanks, Juan, and great to be here. Look forward to this chat, which we've had in the works for some time. So, look forward to unpacking it today.
Yeah, me too. I think it's one of the most interesting categories in MarTech right now. And I'm seeing a whole swag of different companies embrace platform ecosystems in really serious ways. But can you start us off with a story about how you got into this space? I mean, there's no university degree for platform ecosystems, last time I checked. It's kind of a choose-your-own-adventure type career, but how did you get into this space?
Yeah, sure. I think you summed it up nicely to start off with. If you look at the standard business units operating today, sales, marketing, many people have got bachelor or tertiary educations in marketing in particular. Sales, there's various training ongoing and it's an evolving core industry and vertical in itself, often developed through experience and tenure in the market. And I've always seen the value of partnerships early on. I started 10 plus years ago with Vanda, Kiwi company, point of sale. And, you know, I started off in sales and then I moved to account management and senior account management and that sort of path. And I realized early on that, you know, very simply put, if you're able to connect your customers with more surrounding tools to help them win, then you win. And I saw that. And, you know, a few years later down the track, I got the opportunity to work at Xero and lead their ecosystem across the APAC region and, you know, start to realize that you don't have to do it all alone, that you can help your customers win and help your partners win together to be able to bring that to life. And through that, I realized the opportunity in market that's exactly to your point, that there's not hasn't been a lot of operators in market with this sort of skill set or the experience with engagement with the volume of partners around what works and what doesn't work. And that's what I've jumped out to pursue. And so far, so good.
So did you start off in sales and that was your initial pathway into platform ecosystem?
Yeah, that it is. And even today, right now, for a lot of people, it is, there's this cross-functional transition. Globally, right now, there's only a few select courses and education still available to get people started in partnerships. There's a great one out of up in New York, Arthurnio. There's Partnernomics through Mark Brigman's got some course. There's one in Silicon Valley for Sassy Leadership. There's a few. But it was only just getting started. And I think that's just the nature of partnerships and ecosystems as it is and in its current state. It's still evolving. It's still coming through. Traditionally, partnerships is potentially a CEO or a board member or someone's friend. Like, I know this person over here. Someone go chat to them and try and extract all their customers or find out more about them. Or this guy over here, or he was a great sales guy. Let's get him in partnerships to have a go. Or he's got interest and away you go. And, you know, the opportunity to do it great or to try and just have a go and not really produce much results is the gap in market, which is still evolving. And I'm excited to help other companies go a bit faster.
Yeah. So I've been the recipient quite a few times of the warm introduction I would say it's the currency of influence on the internet is getting an introduction to someone that might be helpful for your company or your brand. And that's sort of a very interesting angle on partnerships. A lot of companies already doing partnership type work. They probably just don't even know it. But according to Forrester, about 75% of world trade indirectly flows through partnership ecosystems and platforms. Can you give us a bit of a bird's eye view of how platform ecosystems work? What is this whole industry and how do you identify really strong players in the market?
Yeah, sure. So we'll start off with partnerships. Typically, they're one-to-one. Like, hey, I want to work with this company. You reach an agreement. You set out like some ambitions to do stuff together. Now, that can be sales. It can be fill feature gaps. It can be integration-led. It can help your comms team, your marketing. Every business unit, you've probably already got organic partnerships of some description to go about it. When you start to evolve, where you end up having a whole category and a suite of solutions around it, then you'll end up starting to form an ecosystem. And what that's effectively doing is serving more of your customer needs collectively. And so for everyone listening here, you've got to think about, you know, how can you create your company to be in the minds and the conversations and the water cooler conversations around what's the ideal tech stack or solution that you need to have collectively and be in that ecosystem, be able to sort of move forward. So personally, picture every app you've got on your phone and it's an ecosystem of apps you're using for a business. What tools are they using to plug and play to operate collectively? And then the ecosystem component is around how do all those connected components actually talk to each other, interact, create combined solutions together to ultimately give better outcomes to your customers together. When we move forward and talk around platforms, it gets even more complex. Interestingly, but you'll find that many companies call themselves platforms. There's various interpretations of even what that is around to go about it. My interpretation of platforms has got to have a few components. Typically, it's a tech-led, it's got an open set of APIs. There's some sort of governance around it, so you can't just do whatever you like, right? And there's value exchange both sides. And so the one that's emerging right now is the ChatGPT one, which will just go explosive, where everything is powered by ChatGPT, probably potentially the biggest partnership play of all time evolving. But in the true sense, when I think about platforms, I'm thinking about tech platforms. I think about maybe Apple, you know, potentially Microsoft and the way they've got a huge ecosystem around them. If you look at HubSpot and its growing ecosystem, which, you know, your good friend Scott Brinker has been building for years, you know, the Xero ecosystem, Atlassian, Shopify, these are the platform orchestrators, which have got a bunch of core features which they deploy, but they don't have to do all the work themselves. And so they lean on the partnerships and the ecosystem around it to provide more to their customers.
One example I point to often when I think about this space is Zapier. Fascinating company in that they didn't actually raise a lot of money on the outset. I think their seed raise they didn't even use, but that company has just grown exponentially by facilitating a very simple customer-friendly, user-friendly API service between two different applications or multiple applications. And their ecosystem is massive because, you know, you can integrate, say, MailChimp with Shopify or Salesforce Marketing Cloud with your revenue platforms. Like, there's so much different ecosystems and apps. And that's fascinating because, you know, they set up that API to facilitate the connection between those two companies, but they don't do a lot more outside of that. I mean, a lot of it is just their own customers integrating apps together using their no-code platform. But yeah, to your point that like Apple has got one of the most successful mobile app ecosystems out there, and they've always played a massive role in vetting high-quality apps and making sure that all the different things that are served on that platform are safe for users and valuable for Apple as well. So there's, you know, the tech-led side of things is really interesting, but also is the partnerships, which doesn't include technology companies. It also looks at, you know, media partners, customer partners, you know, even agencies and consultancies as well. And so this is kind of this fascinating world of like a tech-led, platform-led spin on ecosystems, but then also partnerships and more media and content-centric type opportunities as well. And those two things are kind of a Venn diagram. I think they overlap quite a bit. But I guess the question for you, Brian, is like, where is this strength? Like, what companies are doing this stuff really well? And what are those indicators of high-performing platform ecosystems?
Yeah, sure. There's a bunch of metrics that you can sort of feed in and out. And it is kind of like, okay, well, let's think about, start off with things like Slack or Shopify by design. They've got, you know, significant integrations for the end user to make that software even better. So on the tech front, picture things that you're in and out of every day around it. And what they're trying to do is trying to enable network effects to keep you in there. So if you connect to something else that's quite seamlessly left and right and have that really seamless interaction, then you've got more time in that product. That's what they have on the tech aspect. In a way, in terms of actually how to think about what a successful look like in building a partnership ecosystem, but to start off with, it does have to come back to around what are you trying to get out of it? Because it can mean different things for different people. If you're building just one solution and you're not building to the edges or offering more, then it might be partnering for the sake, like you mentioned, of actually filling a feature gap. So who can that component? So that one's not what necessarily be all about various touch points and API touch points to go with it. So in looking for sort of the metrics of what's come in and out, there's probably two components of what it's sort of thought about. It's what's partner influenced? So what's helping our cause in around what we could do in, and what's partner sourced, like a channel? Like what's actually feeding information in and producing sales for us, unlocking a channel to go with it? And that's a sort of two streams around this sort of impact it can have as channels.
Mm. So I guess one of the really interesting aspects of platform ecosystems is this idea that other companies are serving your customer in ways that you can't specifically help them with.
Mm-hmm.
And mapping and identifying how your customers rely on different tools and apps to be successful with your own software is like a real strength, right? Like identifying and understanding the customer view on, well, I need to use this platform, but it only really works when it's integrated with apps X, Y, and Z. So how do you see that? Like, what's the process, I guess, for identifying those dependent and then periphery apps that sit around, say, you know, your technology?
Yeah, I think a simplified view is just looking at the classic supply chain view, right? If it's vertical or horizontal. So if you look at a bookend approach, and you picture your business, for your customers, what are they doing before they use your application or what you offer? And then what are they doing afterwards around it? How do they upgrade above your solution? And then how can you ingest information back up into it? And so what you're looking for is the nearbound opportunities close to you, close to the core of your offering, and develop those partnerships. And what you're effectively doing is you're making your offering even more valuable through these partnerships. So from there, you end up working. And then from that process, you start to work out a very clear list of partners who you should prioritize to work with to sort of start those conversations.
It's fascinating because, you know, I'll take one example, say A-B testing experimentation. A lot of experimentation in the MarTech space is actually based on personalizing different aspects of an experience. And to do that, you actually need data that is perhaps not just available in that A-B testing tool. So there's like a reliance and this really interesting overlap between, say, experimentation tools and customer data platforms or personalization platforms that get that data in the right place so that you can run, say, A-B tests. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a classic example of like a dependency. It's like a customer on the other end is looking at, you know, an experimentation A-B testing tool. In the same way they're looking at CDPs, it's like the end use case, the end value, is actually those two apps working really well together. And that's just one small example out of a galaxy of different examples where you need a variety of apps to work together and they need to be dependent on each other and facilitate that integration really well to be able to then deliver on a use case or a strategy or a, you know, even a transformational uplift in a brand. And so like, I think about it in that from a, like a sales perspective, you think you're talking to your customer about the benefits of your platform and your technology, but your customer is probably thinking, well, how does this integrate with a customer data platform? You know, how does this play with something that else that I really, that's in my stack that I actually really needed to work well with? You know, so that's really fascinating to me is like, how do you identify and map those periphery, but also dependent apps? It's quite a different way of thinking about customer research.
Yeah, it is. And I'd like to think about it like attending conferences. We were speaking before this call around conferences back and forth and how the vendors, typically you go to a standard conference, there's going to be 100 plus booths of information. Now, one thing in common for all of those vendors typically is they're there paying sponsorship dollars, probably good money, to access the same audience which actually walks through the doors to go about it, right? So I look forward to a future day where, imagine if you had 20% of the vendors there together, but you're like, this group over here all sold these components. And so beyond your point one of like, hey, I do this one point or this one niche component, to actually sort of say, all right, well, hey, you want to sell one component, you use us for this part, this before and this afterwards, and that gives you this great output there together. We've decided not to build all the parts, but we've partnered up together around to go about it. And to your point, imagine the intended customer to say, oh, I get that. I understand that straight away. I don't have to try and Frankenstein or put Band-Aids across all the solutions I'm looking for. This all flows really nicely. There's a really great end journey for around it, and then everyone wins. So I think that's a good way to sort of look at it. Just it's quite visual because we've all been in there. We've all sort of walked the vendor floor, sort of saying, well, what do you do? What do you not do? How does it all plug in? And you sometimes walk away a little bit more confused rather than that sort of frictionless experience, which is enabled by tech today.
And that's why I think you see a lot of these marketing suites come into the space quite a bit, where mm-hmm. say like Adobe or Salesforce, they acquire a CDP or build one, or they offer marketing cloud, email marketing along with CRM, is that, you know, they're trying to create that ecosystem within their own services to try and solve everything for a customer. But yep. on one edge, it's like, that makes sense. And it's valuable for, say, a customer go, oh, I can do my email marketing, I can do all my CRM movements, I can do all my analytics, say, within one platform. That's cool. But increasingly, you know, marketers are becoming more sophisticated and they're saying, well, why would we rely on one single point of failure, one company, when we can get the best of breed of a variety of tools, and then mm-hmm. we rely on a really strong, say, API or an ecosystem that facilitates those integrations, where you don't need to go with everything that's, say, blue branded from Salesforce or red branded from Adobe. You know, there's a fascinating sort of piece there where it's like, well, customers are thinking, like customers of technologies are actually increasingly thinking about, well, yeah, it's the strength in a lot of the platforms or the tools is actually the integrations and how well they work within a holistic stack. But I want to shift the gears a little bit here and talk about like building out a ecosystem strategy within a company. Now, mm-hmm. it's one of those things where it touches so many different areas of a business. It touches marketing, it mm-hmm. touches go-to-market, it touches product, it touches engineering, it touches sales, it touches field marketing, it touches events, it touches media relations, it touches all these different areas, this sort of ecosystem strategies. But I want to learn from you, like, where do you see that planning and that strategy for ecosystems happening within companies? Where should it live? Is it neglected? Is it peripheral? Who should be owning this stuff within, a tech company?
Yeah, so it should be seen as a strategy, not a department, first up. That's a great term that Jared Fuller from a partner hacker likes to use. And I think it really, what I would take from it is that it really needs to be cross-functionally, and you start from the leadership down. So in terms of the actual thinking behind it, it needs to actually be cross-functional across every aspect very intentionally for some of the reasons you mentioned. If it does be the touch point across every business unit, then it needs to be a considered approach around why it's a better together. So it becomes a methodology or a business principle around how you choose to operate, right? It's typically why partnership teams are primarily often quite lean, because they've got they should be consulted against across those business units, as various business units are looking to go faster with a partner-led approach. So commonly today, the reality is this space is still evolving. The traditional CRO sales manager will look for partnership to say, hey, go extract customers, you know, customer lists or something out of the partners to go about it. But there's an opportunity in market, and we're seeing lots of green shoots in lots of places of companies who are starting to actually deploy, like, hey, if we partner up on a bunch of these components, we can save time because we can, you know, diversify the actual effort to go with it. We can save costs because all of our co-marketing efforts is reduced to go about it. And we can operate smarter businesses.
So is the hard bit of building an ecosystem strategy the alignment, like getting everyone on the same page? Is that the hard bit?
Yeah. So if you don't have exec level support to support and drive this as a key initiative, then it will always remain this small component, which is meant to feed into sales, and it'll probably be largely ineffective to go with it. And so it really needs to start at that top level to make sure it filtered through. Like I said before, it's a strategy, not a department.
So can you take us into the boardroom for a minute, and maybe we can do a bit of a role play here?
Sure.
Okay. So you're having a conversation with an executive about the value of an ecosystem strategy. Now, who's that executive? Who are you talking to? The chief operating officer, the CMO? Who are you normally talking with?
So I'll usually be talking to the chief operating officer or the CEO. But let's potential, like I'm talking to the entire C-suite. They're like, hey, Brian, can you tell us why we should invest? We're thinking about it. What it should go like, right?
Okay. And so where do you start that conversation? Do you show them the stats and the case studies, or do you start with like a business analysis and go, well, hey, here's all the opportunity left on the table? Like, what's that first conversation?
I think you got to showcase what great looks like, because there's companies out there doing it. You know, there's stats around like for every AWS partner in around their ecosystem, they earn about $6 for every someone earns a dollar with AWS. Salesforce has got similar stats. HubSpot's released some stats around it as well, that they've got this thriving ecosystem around them, which operates on the back of what their core offering does. And so, you know, with HubSpot, 1,000+ apps, Xero, 1,000+ apps, Shopify, 6,000+ apps, they're all building solutions. They're not building e-commerce solutions around it. And so if you can empower this whole ecosystem around it, wouldn't you be better off as an organization to be able to stay lean? So I'd always start with like a future lens around to go about it. Then I'd bring it back to and sort of, I'd make sure I would understand around like, what's your key objectives? What's your top three, you know, things that you want to go after, and equally, what's your challenges right now? And start there for the fuel conversation.
Okay, so my name is Juan. I am the CEO of Mendoza Corp. And Mendoza Corp is a CRM company, you know, and we serve customers in all regions. Mm-hmm. And we sell CRM software. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm the CEO of that company. And you just give me this presentation saying, wow, look at all these ecosystem opportunities. Mm-hmm. But I'll say, okay, cool. I'm on board with that. I mean, it seems like it's a really great way to build a brand. It's a really great way to access new customers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, awesome. And so, Brian, I'm assuming that you're either a consultant or like somebody that's actually advocating internally. But my question back to you would be, well, okay, so like, where do you start? Like, who should I delegate this role to in a business? Like, where and how much investment do I probably need for the first financial year of running a program here?
Yeah, to start off with, we are seeing the emergence of chief ecosystem officers on the C-suite level. There is CROs or CMOs, which roll up at partnerships teams, depending on the role of what partnerships could play. But I think it comes back to one and your enterprise around what you want partnerships to be for your business, right? And what is the key components of what you're looking at to solve? If you're a CRM business, as per your example of this upcoming company, which I'm sure will go massive, you got to think like, do you want to try and go about it yourself? You know, your sales team's probably limited to a degree, and who else can be out there talking around your solution? Who else is going to feed information into your fancy CRM company to go with it? What other jobs to be done is there for your customers that you have now or intended customers in the future, and how can you have a better together narrative?
And, you know, that exactly to your point, right, is that it depends on the goals of your business and aligning an ecosystem to those goals, because I think it's so widespread. And there's so much diversity in an ecosystem, you can kind of choose your own adventure a bit, you know. For an example, right, like, okay, going back to, you know, the CEO of Mendoza Corp, CRM company, you know, maybe our goal is to build brand awareness. Well, ecosystems can help with that, because to your point, you have not just your sales reps or your marketing people doing campaigns, you actually have successful customers that are advocating for you, and those technology partners that are advocating for you across a variety of deals. So as a CEO, I'm like, well, we want to build our brand. Great. Tick. We want customers to be more successful. Again, tick, right? Because again, those partners will help facilitate that holistic picture of customer success through integrations, supporting software. Let's say you help us figure out an agency partnership model where those agencies will be out there standing up the technology for us. And so all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, you know, I think your point is spot on in that it really depends on what the brand is chasing, what that tech company is chasing. Yeah. Is it growth? Is it customer success? Is it, you know, even just building awareness and brand? I mean, ecosystems solve all that It just depends on what adventure you want to choose, I guess. Thanks for bearing with me on that, you know. Mendoza Corp, let's see how we go. Maybe we can
IP. Let's go. Yes.
So I guess going into this whole idea of, I guess, partnership and app ecosystems and the risk they present themselves to be when it comes to the apps that they serve within those ecosystems. You know, I think that we see good and bad examples. We have positive and zero-sum games within ecosystems. You know, ecosystems can play a role of a company tripling or 10xing its size over a year just by choosing the right ecosystem and finding new customers and discovery. But it can also limit innovation with heavy-handed take rates. You know, some ecosystems have more than 30% take rate on all revenue created from that platform. And it could actually limit innovation, can limit brands, and also, I think, cut off customers from discovering new tools and apps and services. And so how do you think about the ethics of platform ecosystems? How do you navigate that? What are the positive and negative externalities that impact a ecosystem play?
Yeah. So earlier I mentioned that for a true platform, you need to have a set of governance to go with it. And so even the biggest players and platforms have got very clearly articulated and publicly available rules of engagement to partake as a part of it. Now, if they're going to take a commercial cost of 15 to 30% and spend very much on the public eye increasingly to drive leads, then that's the commercial model, which is underpinned to get access to their customers, which is why you'd be building to that integration to go with it. The reality is they are the power players. The reason they can charge for that is they have critical mass. They have the customers that you want to go after. And if you're going to choose to enter those components, then there's a rules of engagement, which you've got to uphold to be a part of it to start off with, and they do in return to go about it. And so the way I would see it is literally it's a channel, it's a CAC, it's a cost to serve to enter that ecosystem and to go about it. It doesn't mean that you have to be solely dependent on one ecosystem in particular, right? And so you can be multi-sided and participate on many platforms that you don't necessarily have to build only on one platform. And some do. Some do and go really deep and just build really deep niche to go about it. But the question is, even with those commercials aside, would you be able to have access to those customers on your own and with what efforts without those capabilities? So a lot of them, you know, they solve billing, mainly to control the data and the flow of funds which come with it. But you don't have to build billing components if you're getting started for your new CRM Inc., for example. You don't have to go and build Stripe. You could just use it out of the box, right, as a potential partner to handle that component, to drive traffic via their app stores or via their channels, via various co-marketing or efforts under their typically what they'd have a partner program. And so it's an option. It's a channel which you can build out alongside your current efforts. And how do you enable that can be in different ways. So I think it's also worth remembering a lot of these app stores these days, they're only charging those commission components for traffic driven from their app store. So if there's integrations outside of that, they're often agnostic toward that as well, which is probably worth calling out and remembering.
Yeah. And I look at ecosystems and their growth over time and their influence over, say, a tech category. And, you know, back maybe 10 years ago, where most ecosystems were quite small, it made sense for apps to just sort of go straight in and integrate with a variety, whether it's Google's ecosystem, Microsoft's or Apple's. But now we're seeing this sort of entropy, maybe this is the right words, entropy, of ecosystems where they're extracting way more value than they give. You know, one example, well, there's really actually a couple examples. Apple's been in the headlines for a lot of their ecosystem forays, but there's two examples from Apple, which is Epic Games, they filed a lawsuit for their take rate. So, you know, if you do in-app purchases, which for Epic Games, you know, Fortnite, all of the big blockbuster games, that's hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue come through in-app purchases. And so they took Apple to court saying, why are you taking 30% of our millions of dollars and you don't allow us to charge customers in the app without that take rate? And then that opens up a really interesting question. Okay, well, you know, is there a justification for this take rate? What value does Apple provide outside of the, I guess, the distribution of apps? So yeah. That's one example. Maybe I'll touch on the second one, which is, again, Apple introducing Apple tracking transparency. They made a basically a bilateral move within their own business to say, we're going to cut off the majority of data that's shared from apps on our platform and to different developers, you know, across the space. And in that example, you've basically cut the value, you know, like you've really limited the value of like hundreds of mobile gaming apps that monetize through targeted advertising that relies on that data sharing. And so Apple makes these big heavy-handed moves and all of a sudden, the whole industry implodes. And I think about that and I'm like, well, where's the ethics in that? Like Apple's a private corporation, you know, the partners and the apps within that platform, they don't have a vote on those changes. There's no democratic process, but yet they can charge 30% as they like, and they can cut off the data supply to a variety of apps. Now, does that make sense? I think ethically, that's really quite a challenging thing to navigate. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a more recent example is Twitter as well, as Elon got rid of the whole platform developer team completely. And so the same situation happened with Twitter is that you picture building a business solely on Twitter APIs that was dependent on information flow and sort of cut that off as he got rid of that, you know, entire team. It's the implications are astronomical, right? And so, yeah, there's a social responsibility to make sure that you uphold. So it's one thing to upload and, you know, some platform principles the way you operate, but there is a moral responsibility to go about that. And so, you know, those developer communities, you know, they're not going to forget about this lightly, you know, if they've had businesses turn over. And one of the success signals that I often see is successful companies are where the developers are heading, right? What's new and exciting and attractive and what pays the most is where all the developers end up in reality, right? And so they say follow the developers. And so if the likes of Apple was to not look after their core audience in this aspect, or Twitter accordingly, or others ahead, was reputational and future risk to the business.
And I guess, you know, maybe at a philosophical level, every company is dependent on a whole variety of platforms, quote unquote, to do business. If it's ensuring the government can pave the roads and make them safe so that customers can drive up to your store, you know, you're reliant on your local council, your government, to make sure that, you know, that customers can actually drive up and, you know, purchase stuff from your store. In the same way as, say, for example, Westfield, right? If you have a physical store, you're paying rent to Westfield for that distribution, which is basically foot traffic in front of your store. You're paying Apple for the same, basically, at a fundamental level, you're paying for that distribution and for the whole variety of just store and hosting an app within their ecosystem. And so apps, it's not really that much of an issue at the end of the day, because every company relies on a variety of other companies, but also, you know, governments and different services around that to actually just do business, you know. Like, I think that's another interesting way to think about it, is that, you know, that you have to rely on apps. And I think when it comes down to it, you have to really think about what's their moral framework. Like, a positive example here is Microsoft. I mean, in recent years, they've actually diminished their total take rate from app developers building on their platform, which incentivizes more apps to be built, which means that the whole ecosystem grows stronger because there's more value back going back to those developers and those companies building on top of Azure, and also the variety of ecosystems around Xbox and then the Microsoft Office suite and all of that as well. So I think, like, the ethical challenge is when these ecosystems get really big and they don't have some kind of oversight to ensure that the applications and the developers get a good deal. One example, even just from my work with the MarTech Weekly, is that early on, I had a decision I needed to make, which was, should I write on Substack or not? Substack is like an ecosystem for writers and newsletter authors and media companies. And I looked at it, I said, well, my distribution would be greater on Substack. They've got all these features that introduce your newsletter to their hundreds of millions of different readers. And I looked at that and I said, well, yeah, you can publish on their platform. You know, it's a great experience. But then the cons of that was that, well, I mean, Substack's a single point of failure. If the company goes belly up, what happens to my readers? You know, my readers will see my company, my brand, through the lens of Substack. And I made a decision against joining Substack, despite a bunch of people telling me that I'm an idiot. I'm kind of glad I am, because it helps differentiate yourself as well. Even though there's more value to be had in the ecosystem, it doesn't necessarily mean you should participate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and in that instance, it'd be a solution partnership for you, for them to provide the platform for you to distribute your newsletter, right? Similarly with payments, like a lot of people can use Stripe out of the box to be able to go about it, right? But imagine if Stripe went down or had stability issues or you couldn't process payments, the companies would be massively impacted, especially those with significantly high volume. So it's all to be considered as looking and mapping it out, and part of the due diligence which is required when you're going into these around what is the risks potentially, what would be a risk charter of entering certain partnerships as you look to assess the benefits to go with it.
And one thing that you talk a bit about quite a bit at Hockey Stick is like a framework for different types of partners within an ecosystem. So I think this is the BCG model, which you're working within, which is quite interesting, touching on supplier, orchestrator, and complementer. Could you unpack what those three things mean?
Yeah, so if we'll start off with an orchestrator. They typically, I'll give an example, like Shopify, HubSpot, Atlassian, Microsoft, Apple. So they've got typically critical mass of customers within their platform, which they're serving the needs to go with it. So then on the other two sides, you've got complementers. And what they do is they extend the value of the core platform. Now, the platform itself, and you mentioned this earlier, might have some features or light features. It's like, oh, yes, we do emails or calendar appointment setting per se, but there might be deeper integrations available, deeper functionality through the ecosystem. And so one example for myself personally is I use Calendly for bookings, but I also use HubSpot. I could do HubSpot bookings component. Google's also got some components as well. And so do I want to use the HubSpot or the Google native functionality, or do I continue to believe Calendly is a better solution for myself as a complementary role to the other solutions which I'm using to go with it? And so typically those who are building a niche point solution, they've been building it longer, they're building it deeper, that's their core focus and functionality. And so the actual functionality for that best in breed solutions often lives in the point solutions that are available through the ecosystem and the app play to go with it. Now, the supplier relationship is equally the same as well. They can potentially be dependent completely on the orchestrator for actually all of them to be able to service their needs as well, respectively. And so the roles of both of all of these triangular components to actually what they can do to influence or not will vary. So to complement it, as if someone is building a point solution, because they don't offer the full component, they're dependent upon the bigger companies to go with it. And so that could be dependent for growth or the rules of engagement, like you mentioned before, what's available via the APIs and the endpoints and all the load times and those components. And so the capabilities of their product as it is only as good as the orchestrator, which we're allowed to do it. The reason they engage is the points we touched on before is because they typically want access to those customers as a growth channel for them to be able to sort of go to market. The downsides is that they have to play by the rules. They have to join a partner program. They have to sort of know their place in around that relationship to go with it. And so, you know, typically the avenues for growth may be limited. And so what I'd actually, what I commonly see in market and companies I work with is trying to encourage them to work with other complementers who are also trying to chase the customers to go about it. But how can you sort of co-share marketing efforts? How can you have a better together narrative side by side surrounding it rather than try and talk to the actual orchestrator themselves, because you're more likely going to get some traction together. Because after all, those others who are complementers, they're either got the customers which you also want or you want to go after. So why can't you sort of partner up to go to market together?
It's a really interesting way of thinking about it, because you're right, there are different shades to the value exchange from a platform ecosystem perspective, like across the three, different dependencies, different ways customers think about those dependencies. And then also like, yeah, the opportunities, right? Like partnerships could be an integration, or it could be a side-by-side content collaboration, or it could be even just a referral system. I mean, you know, there is such an interest. There's so much there to unpack. I mean, you know, and I think that like even Hockey Stick Advisory, it's a fairly new firm. There is, I can see people working in this space, managing ecosystems. It's just, there's so many options. How do you focus? How do you choose the right ones that suit your company and your goals? And which one's going to get the most leverage out of that opportunity as well? And so, yeah, I think that there's probably going to be an interesting like all consulting advisory space to help companies figure out what's the best path, because there's just so many options.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, you do want to implement impactful partnership ecosystems and have very targeted and relevant partnerships in play. And also, which we haven't touched on, is that before working out just who you want to partner with, what's your ideal, you actually need to spend a lot of time on a really considered approach around what you would offer these companies and why they would give a crap about you amongst a sea of opportunities on their sides as well. Because every partner's got, you know, they've got some time to try and think about what's the partners we choose to work with and why, and they've got limited time and resources, as do you. And so you need to work really hard once you've identified which partners which would be ideal, which ones you have got an exciting partnership value proposition. Because unless you do, you can have all the partnerships in the world, but they'll be ghost agreements. It'll waste everyone's time and it won't deliver the sort of the promised land of what we sort of spoke to get that CRM company up and running fast.
Yes, a world of opportunities, seeing incentive structures, risks. It's just a fascinating space, I think. But one thing, and our final thing that we'll touch on, which I think is underexplored, is the role of trust within platform ecosystems. Mm-hmm. I mean, even myself, I partner with a variety of events, media companies, platforms from a media perspective. And you know what? Some of these relationships are going from strength to strength, and we're partnering on new opportunities and great work. But some completely lose trust over time, you know. And before recording, it was a bit of a counseling session, Brian. I'm sorry to put you through that, but I was lamenting a little bit about how, you know, some companies have so much value to unlock from a partnership, but they just don't come to the table. They lack conscientiousness or proactiveness, or they just don't even reply to your emails or turn up for a call, even though you've established a relationship. And I think that trust is like the currency here, right? like from a company in an ecosystem, trusting that platform that they're going to do the right thing. From that right down to, are these people actually going to jump on a call and engage? But how do you think about instilling trust, navigating trust within ecosystems?
Yeah, so if you take an internal look across your company, like who's the dependable, great, engaged people that you like working with, that when you reach out to, they want to try and help you win to go about it. And so partnerships externally should be thought about the same. And so you want to treat your key partners like employees, because in lots of ways, they kind of are. They're out there selling your information, you know, your stuff. They're talking about it. They're looking for ways to work together to unlock opportunities to go with it. And trust is built over time. You know, it's underpinned with people, and you can quickly lose it if you don't sort of uphold it. And so the companies I work with are typically trying, you know, give them an aspirational goal. How can you be the partner of choice? So out of a sea of partners, of opportunities that they don't have on their end, how can you provide the most opportunities, be the most reliable, most, you know, invested in their success? And if you actually want to make the partnership work, if you're able to deploy those characteristics, it's probably going to go a long way in terms of bringing results back to you in return.
The way I think about it is, with any new partnership, you'd want to start with a square one mentality. Like, what's a really small unit of value that establishes some form of working relationship? You know, where I think a lot of partnerships fall down is that they start a relationship, they don't know each other very well, haven't worked with each other, those two companies are fairly foreign. They'll try and do something big, right? Like they'll try and partner on a big event, or they'll try and partner on an integration play. And what I see is that when you start with something really big on a brand new relationship, it's actually really hard to develop it. You know, mm-hmm. I would look at it and say, well, what's something small? And how can we create a story here where we're going from strength to strength and we're growing, and it may take 12 months or 2 years or 3 years, but you're consistently working at it and you prove one small thing together and go, okay, there's value here. And then the next thing's a bit bigger, and the next thing's a bit bigger, and you take bigger bites out of that partnership, right? And I feel like that's something that helps engage both teams to go, there's a growth story here. You know, there's increasingly value that's being gained from this, but we're deliberately going on this journey from sort of square one.
Yeah, it's like a dating journey, right? And I'll talk to that on 2 points. I think primarily because of where KPIs and OKRs, and typically the partnership rolls up into a CRO, CMO in today's environment, they're given objectives to go out in the field and find partnerships to unlock components. And what they're asking for is actually, they're reaching out to partners to extract to start off with. What can I get out of this big customer? They've got a whole cut, you know, big customer base. How can I get them? How can I get these opportunities? How can I get this branding opportunity to go with it? Rather than the mentality of a give to get and to pilot it, to date it, like you said, like, how can I help this other partner? I really want to work with these guys. I'm going to prove my worth. Jill Rowley in the States often says, show me you know me. That's what she says. And I love that because it's like, I know what you're trying to achieve, and I'm going to prove to you that I know what you're about, and I'm going to try and help you win. And we're going to go through this dating process, so I'm going to prove and validate it. And what you're actually doing is your previous question. You're actually building trust. You're building that relationship that you're not there just to extract, just to take stuff in, but you're actually invested in their success. And it just changes the mentality. And so as you go through that courting period, like you said, you're actually validating that and to be able to build a strong, sustainable partnership, which actually can deliver results.
Yeah. And I mean, look, you know, the dating market is, I would say my assessment of it at the moment is it's quite a mess, you know. All the, you know, as you mentioned, like courtship, that probably doesn't happen anymore in the dating market. But I think you're right in that, you know, you don't really approach dating from the perspective of what kind of value can I get out of this potential partner, you know, you know, or this boyfriend or girlfriend or this person I want to take on a date, right? You're like, how can I get to know them, right? Like, show me you know me. And I think that's quite an interesting way of thinking about it because, you know, even I receive a variety of pitches on the MarTech Weekly, and a lot of those pitches are tech companies saying things like, would you like to join our referral program, right? We'll give you 30% of revenue for every new lead that you drive to us. And I'm like, I'm not interested in that at all. You don't actually know our platform and our brand when you offer some form of incentive like that. That's not what we do. And so, you know, that's show me you know me and actually taking time to listen to like what a brand is about and what that company is trying to achieve in a market is actually probably a really good place to start with partnerships. It's just sit down, do a whiteboard session, go, what are you guys trying to do and how can we help unlock that stuff as a starting point? Give to get, right? Give, 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 and then you get over time. But yeah, I think it's just so much in that, even just partnership space, where I think there's a lot of interesting dynamics and incentives similar to dating. I think it's a good call out. But Bride, thank you for joining us. I mean, it's been fascinating learning about your work with Hockey Stick Advisory and also navigating this really complex world of platform ecosystems and partnerships. But I want to throw it to you. Where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. And been great chat. There's lots of topics we could speak a lot longer for, I'm sure. So I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So, you know, feel free to add me there where I'll sort of give my musings on partnerships and platforms around and the evolution I'm sort of seeing in market. Also, check me out at hockeystickadvisory.com, which is my website as well.
Great. Well, thank you, Brian. Thanks for joining Making Sense of MarTech. We regularly interview people who are at the forefront of various industries within the marketing technology category. People like Brian, who is pioneering platform ecosystems with brands across the world. But if you'd like to subscribe and stay up to date with this podcast, you can subscribe to themartechweekly.com and also hit that subscribe button in your podcatcher as well. But Brian, thanks again for joining us.
Cheers, Brian. Been a pleasure.